You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
A reminder, if you've got a smart speaker in your home, it can turn into a radio. All you have to do is tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. There it is. It's a radio right there for you. So do that if you haven't already done that. It's nice to have a radio at home. This defense we've been talking about, Dave, the question was essentially, have they turned the corner? We talked about, you know, the steady progression in the last three games in terms of points allowed, in terms of yardage. I mean, just basically across the board, they've been very, very good. Now, you could chalk this game up to it being the Philadelphia Eagles. I think there's some truth to that. They're struggling, but he did a number on the Cardinals, and maybe one of the, if he's not the most dangerous guy, one of the most dangerous guys in the league, and Kyler Murray limiting him to, what, 15 yards rushing. The team was, what, 50 yards or 51? That to me was a legit, hey, there's no excuse making they're missing this guy, that guy. That's a good team that was playing well and running all over everybody, and they shut them down. This one you could qualify it much more, in my opinion.
Yeah, I just think when you are doing things right, there's been some things that have been driving me nuts. And, you know, do I see that, you know, they're overmatched physically, you know, talent-wise? No. Have they been missing a bunch of tackles? No. Have they not taken advantage of, like, situations or, you know, an opportunity to, you know, get a fumble or an interception? No, not really. It's been other things. It's been, number one, the two things that just have been driving me crazy are protecting the perimeter. So, you know, in the NFL, look, it's a long field on both sides because the hash marks are about 6 yards apart. And, you know, you've always got a wide side, so you always have to protect the perimeter. And what I mean is just turn plays back in. Mm-hmm. They started doing that. They started doing it in the second half of the Ram game. And that's something that has driven me nuts.
When that's not – sorry to cut you off, but when that's not happening, is that because guys are trying to make plays? They're trying to do something that's outside of what we call their job? Because that's what we kept hearing every week. If guys just do their job. If guys just do their job. Is that part of what suffers, that outside pushing everything back in when guys are trying to do more?
Yeah, I don't think that they're getting beat physically. I think that they're just not executing their job, right? So, and some of it's going underneath a block instead of staying over the top. And you can go underneath a block if you make the tackle. But if you don't, the guy's out the gate, and you basically make the block. It's the easiest block for an offensive lineman or a receiver in the world, if all you have to do is just kind of push them inside, and they're not going to get there. So, you know, that's something, yeah, it's more about just executing what you're supposed to do and working as hard as you can. There's a play in the Arizona game down near the goal line where Jamal Adams and DJ Reed just string it out perfectly. It was almost as good as KJ Wright's open field tackle on Kyler Murray. And that was another case of him not letting him. He was not going to let him get outside of him. But that there was a play where, you know, and I feel like a lot of times Jamal and DJ, not them specifically, but two players on the Seahawks defense would have both gone inside or both gone outside. But instead, Jamal Adams fought really hard to get outside, and DJ Reed fought really hard to stay inside. And so those are the kinds of things. And then the second thing that has driven me nuts is the deep crosser. I mean, that is getting picked up. And it wasn't so much, I think Bobby was in man-to-man last night on Goddard. You know, I thought he was running down the seam in cover two because I thought there was two safeties. But, you know, sometimes you can't tell exactly what they're doing. But, you know, that kind of thing. And Bobby did it in the Arizona game as well at the end on that last drive where, you know, he knocked that ball away from Larry Fitzgerald. So, but also, you know, I talked about that with Jordan Brooks, and, you know, and I've seen Bobby and KJ, they're starting to do those kinds of things. So those things work against everybody. You know, if you get, they're good enough talent-wise that if you're executing it, that's all I want. I just want to see them execute it. You don't have to go and make some special play or anything. Just get there. And, you know, one great example was, And Moyer sent me this clip, and it was Jordan Brooks picking up a deep crosser, and it was a tight end, which it typically is, and it caused a sack. And this is a very direct highlight of Jamal Adams getting a sack because Jordan Brooks picked up the deep crosser. Because Goff was sitting there waiting for him to come open, and he went to throw the ball, and he saw that Brooks had him covered, and it was about 20, 25 yards downfield, and he had to pull the ball down, and that gave Jamal Adams enough time to get there and get a strip sack. So as long as you're executing those kinds of things, I think you can do that against anybody. Their talent, you know, look, how talented is the Eagles' receiving core? Not very. They're not. And you're probably not going to see a super talented group against, you know, the Jets or anybody else that they play over the next 3 weeks. But if you're doing that, that works against the Rams. That works against, you know, the 49ers, certainly. So, and that's really what's left on the schedule. So those are the things that, and that's just two examples. But, you know, once you start, and it just drove me nuts because it's just an assignment thing. It's assignment football, man. You could get anybody out there to do that. So, you know, you might get a slower guy. Maybe Cody Barton has to just totally turn and run, as you know, although I think he's fast. And I talked to Lofa. He likes Cody Barton. He thinks that, you know, he's a good player as well. He's just not on the field right now because of Jordan Brooks. So, you know, if you're able to just do that with even a guy like Cody Barton, which I think is talented, and a lot of people, you know, maybe other people don't, Ben Burkervin, same thing. I mean, just get anybody out there to do that. That works. So, yeah, I think it is, you want to say turn a corner. Yeah, you still got a lot to prove. And it's not like, hey, look, we did it. We're here. You got to keep doing it every week. Yeah. So, and I think a lot of that is why they've gotten 22 sacks over the last five games now.
Is there somebody that's standing out to you that's playing differently than they did when we were all talking about this is a historically bad defense, I can't believe the yardage, blah, 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 everything that was going on. Is there somebody that stands out, wow, he looks different over the last three games, two games?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, I want to make it sound like he wasn't doing this, but KJ, I think he's the one that in the beginning against like Miami, where you could see that he was really trying to get his pass drops deeper and drive to get underneath a receiver. I've sent you a couple of videos where, you know, it's cover two, there's five guys underneath, and everybody drives to a receiver except for one guy who drives to the same receiver the other guy's at, and he's wide open, and the quarterback sees it. So, but I think that, you know, KJ's probably the guy that has been the most, like, responsible throughout the year and just really taking it upon himself. You could see, and I had a football 101 where he didn't get under the number one receiver in that Miami game. It was one of the first plays, and you could see him pat his chest like, that's my bad. I'll get under that guy next time. Sure right. enough, he did. Almost got himself an interception. He knocked down three passes in that game, and then a week later he gets a one-handed interception against Minnesota. So those kinds of things are – and I want to say it's super easy or anything, but it's just like you've got to be mindful of knowing that you can't. And some of it might be that they're taking chances, what you said, Bob, you know, trying to do too much, trying to jump an underneath receiver and get an interception when, you know, you really just have to stay back and keep everything in front of you. So there might have been a little bit of that going on, but this is an experienced enough group where they should all be, you know, doing their jobs and know exactly what they're supposed to do on every play.
How much difference does Jamal Adams make? His presence? Because I was saying this in the notes I sent to you guys last night that he's just different. He's a special player. His energy, he's again, he's so animated and he's so just ferocious out there. And you can tell he just loves it. He's just eating up every moment of it. When he lays a hit on a guy, he's fired up. And he brings an element that I don't think has been there. And that's not a knock on Bobby or KJ. It's not their personality. But just that sort of he's like a caged animal out there, and he's just ready to go. It feels like every single play. You kind of saw that with Earl when Earl was here. He was kind of manic out there almost. And there was an attitude and a swagger with Cam and Sherm and Earl that I think hasn't really been there since they left. And he, to me, is the epitome of that. He's just he brings an element. And outside of just the basic football play, just his attitude, his aggressiveness, his passion, it's just different. And I almost feel like that's contagious. The game just looks different when he's out there.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that they have him this year because this is an emotional defense. You know, guys like Bobby and, you know, and I guess KJ a little bit, and just in general, they get fired up because of the crowd. Jamal Adams comes with, you know, they have that thing, bring your own juice,
yeah,
to the stadium. I mean, he brings that. And I think, you know, that's when you're out there on the field with you see a guy like that, like you kind of have a tendency, if you respect him, which I'm sure they do, to I got to live up to the, you know, level of energy this guy's bringing. And so I think that's what's so important in this landscape that we're in with no crowd to get the defense fired up. He gets himself fired up. He shows up fired up.
He's got juice for everybody.
He does. He's got enough to go around.
Man, the amount of energy that guy expends playing, not playing, cheering, yelling, it's he's kind of manic. It's fun for me to watch. And we talked about him earlier, that the knock on him from some is that, oh man, he's just not good. He's good rushing the passer. He should be a linebacker. He's not good in coverage. And obviously he took exception to that. Here he is with our buddy Joe Fan, sort of calling him out for those criticisms.
Mr. Joe, you don't have anything to say? Mr. Joe, how was my coverage?
Man, well, I don't know why you're salty. I just asked, how do you feel?
Oh, man, you know, I mean, you said I got a little salty, man. I don't get salty, brother. Trust me. It takes a lot for me to really get salty. So I just wanted to ask you how my coverage was today.
Oh, I was going to ask you by the time.
Oh, okay.
More in man coverage. You said on Friday that you were hoping that, or you were excited for things to change in the game coming up. I didn't get a chance to ask a follow-up. Do you feel like you were in man coverage more in this game?
Absolutely. But how did I do? I'm asking you.
I thought you looked okay.
Damn, that makes my day. I'm going to have a hell of a flight, man.
Man.
I appreciate you, brother. No, it's all love, man. I appreciate y'all.
See, he's even... Look how energetic and animated he is there. He's
still going.
He's still going. Feels like his energy's at 10. He's just, and Joe, to his credit, kind of went, I thought you did okay. You know, he wasn't like, oh, man, you were great. I give him credit for sticking to his guns there.
What do you call him, Brother Joe?
Here, let me play the beginning again.
Mr. Joe, you don't have anything
Mr.
to
Joe.
Say?
Mr. Joe,
how was my coverage?
Mr. Joe.
I love it.
But he feels like he's vibrating there. Like, Mr. Joe, you know what I mean? You say about Mike? He's so intense. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I do too. And I'll have to find the play because I was sticking up for him during the – but it was one play. And really, I swear I heard him say, oh, the thing on Diggs? Is that what you're all talking about? He was talking about the Stephon Diggs thing. And I brought it up just because – he jammed the heck out of him. He covered him, and then he just kind of dropped him for...
Like he thought he had help behind him or something?
I don't know, man. It was like he got... I feel like sometimes he gets a little bit distracted. Like he's trying to, again, I think he's trying to see the whole field. And I don't want to criticize him. I'm not criticizing him at all. I'm just saying I couldn't understand what happened on that play. But, you know, the thing that occurred to me is that's it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's it? That's what you're judging his coverage on? One play?
Well, part of it, I think, is what you always point out, and that is we don't know if they're in a zone or a man coverage or whose responsibility is what. He's supposed to let the guy go, trusting that there's somebody behind him or, you know, there. Of all the – I mean, you've shown me I don't know how many plays now where I'm looking at a guy going, well, he's trailing him. It's that guy. Well, no, actually, this guy should be here, and he should have gone here. And I'm going, oh, okay. So now – you know, I'm very reluctant to criticize anybody that is not clearly in a man situation because I don't know what the rules are. I don't know who was supposed to pick him up. And I feel like maybe he's a victim of that, or maybe he's in a trailing position and people go, well, he blew it.
Yeah.
When in actuality, maybe it was Diggs. Maybe it was Trey Flowers. Maybe, who knows?
Right. Yeah, and I think that might be what's going on. I mean, look, and you know, I don't want to... Chris Collinsworth said this when he was like a founding partner for Pro Football Focus. And I remember interviewing him, and he's like, yeah, you know, I mean, most of the time you could pretty much tell who has what guy and who screws up, right? And I was kind of like, I don't know, Chris, I'm not so sure about that. But, you know, I think that some of that, you know, here's a play that stands out to me. Against Atlanta in week one, he's in what I think is cover two, but Julio Jones runs like a 15 to 20 yard dig route where he just, you know, goes up the field and drives in, or just a kind of a little in route. And he and Bobby, who is supposed to be underneath it, he jumps the short guy. So there's a clear path for a throw there. And Jamal Adams comes and breaks the pass up. That's Julio Jones running a route there. So, yeah, I never understood that in the first place. But there was a play last night. I'll have to go take another look at it and just see. But, I mean, that's going to happen every once in a while. But I don't think that it all of a sudden it became a thing where – and I feel like a lot of people were also saying, well, why isn't he playing linebacker? He has been playing linebacker. That's basically where he's been lined up because, you know, if you're in cover three, you have four underneath droppers, and three of them are going to be linebackers, and one of them is going to be the strong safety. Mm-hmm. The deep droppers are going to be your two corners and your free safety. So that's why he's lined up in the box, which is great because they can blitz him from there. He's good against playing the run. And then he doesn't have far to go to get to his zone drop. I mean, he can drop 12 yards just like anybody else. So, yeah, that part has been kind of mystifying to me. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe there's a couple of plays in there, but there's just been so much good from him that I think it's one of those things, Bob, that just gets said and then somebody hears it and then somebody repeats it. Kind of like the eye discipline thing or, you know, calling it guarding instead of hovering. Oh, I think that sounds cool. I'm going to start saying guard him, you know. And I remember asking the single high safety thing. I asked Condota that. This is why I love Bob Condota. He goes, I don't know. I guess we're all just trying to sound smart.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great answer. I'm like, okay, that's fine if that's it. But, yeah, I mean, all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, but he's not in. It becomes like this, which I hate this word, but it becomes this narrative that everybody is repeating it, and all of a sudden it gets said, and then it becomes reality. It gets like spoken into reality when it's not a reality.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I think also part of it is what the Seahawks gave up for him. So there's an expectation that he makes every play, right? If we want to isolate any player on that defense, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, you know, Shaq Griffin, whoever, just name whatever player you want. We're gonna find plays they're not making. We're gonna say, oh man, Diggs messed up there. Or, hey, Bobby screwed that one up. Or KJ, nobody has played a perfect game yet in the history of this game, as far as I know. Right. Somebody's gonna miss a play. Somebody's gonna take a bad angle. Somebody's gonna, you know, just screw up, have a mental lapse, what have you. So, I think he's being held to maybe a different standard because of his reputation, All Pro. You know, young guy, one of the best in all, maybe the best safety in all of football. And then he comes here and you gave up all these draft picks for him. Oh, how did he blow that coverage? How did Diggs make? Diggs is one of the best receivers in this league. And yeah, maybe he made a mistake. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he just got beat. I mean, it's just the standard is raised when we talk about money. And we've talked about that before, whether it's Bobby, whether it's Russell. The bar is so much higher because as the wage goes up, the expectation goes up. And you're not, there is no slack. There is no allowance for making a mistake.
Mr. Joe.
Yeah. Mr. Joe.
We have a spotter up in the booth, Chris Taylor, who's just like the most awesome dude ever. Just call him CT. Actually, whenever I see him and Rabel together, I'm like, look, it's CT and CTE.
Oh,
standing
boy.
Right next to each other.
Oh,
but,
poor Rabel.
It's a good one. That's a good one. Wow, you like that. But it was kind of funny where I don't think he was doing it necessarily on purpose, but I was looking at the one play where, and I was like, well, I guess you could use that as an example, maybe, that somebody said, you know, that Jamal Adams is not great in coverage, you know. And right then, CT came and put this note in front of me, and I have it right here because I save all his notes. He just writes things down, stats and stuff during the game. So, you know, it helps with the radio call. Adams, 9 tackles, 1 sack, 2 quarterback hits, 1 tackle for a loss. So, I mean, you know, that's a pretty good
what
day.
A bust.
Yeah, he's terrible, right? So, yeah it's again, it gets spoken into existence for some reason, and I just don't think it's a thing. It's not a thing.
Well, and then next time he has a play where he gets beat or it looks like he gets beat or whatever, they're going to go, see? He's not good in coverage.
Right.
So it'll snowball. One more from him, though, talking about the swagger for them right now is through the roof.
The swagger's through the roof, man. You know, we're playing with a lot of swagger. We're playing with a lot of confidence. We know when we step on the field, we're gonna try to take the ball away. We're going to get a sack. We're going to get a pick. And then, you know, we're gonna invite everybody to the party, man. That's what we do. We just invite everybody to the party, man. So it's a great feeling. It's a great win. Obviously, those guys did a lot of talking on that other side of the field. But at the end of the day, we're not in the choir, man. We just come out and produce and win ball games.
I love this guy, Dave. I love Jamal Adams. You love Chris Carson. I love Jamal Adams. He's infectious. I feel like if we sat down with him the way we used to be able to in person, I would walk out of that interview just ready to run through a wall. His energy is just infectious.
Right. Well, and that's part of it, man. That's why you bring him in. And that's, I talk all the time about how your personality matters in the NFL, I think more than any other sport, because, you're out there with big dudes. You guys see the play where Yapati's helmet fell off?
Yes.
And he didn't seem to notice that it was off. He kept playing. And, and then he was, holding his eye. I don't know if he got hit in the head or something. But, this is a crazy, wild game where you could get seriously hurt, man. And, it's intense. And you've got, 22 bodies out there just flying around. And, that's where you get tested, you get down sometimes and you just can't, and you need somebody like that. I had a teammate like that. The guy I can most closely, I would compare to him is Steve Atwater.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Atwater, first of all, just a stud player. But he was also just this tall, good looking guy. He had this, awesome wife. I think she was an attorney, and he was just like Mr. America, and he was a great player. And when I came to Denver, it's like he went out of his way to get to know me. And then, and then I read an article in, the Rocky Mountain News, and Steve Atwater is talking about me, saying, what a good addition I was. And then, he would come up during a game and say things to me, and he made you feel like $1 million, and that's the kind of leader that Jamal Adams, what I would compare him to. And, it's just, you can hear it in his voice. First of all, I love his voice. He's got a great voice, but he's just always up, always positive, and the guy is an unbelievable player. So, I don't want to hear any more about his coverage being poor. He can run, he can cover, he can do everything.
All right, coming up, we'll take a look at the offense. Is the offensive line still playing well? We talked much about it early in the season. Where are they at now, and how much of a spark did Chris Carson's return provide? We'll get into all of that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. And a reminder, you can download the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, and it's free. So you can take us with you wherever you go. Listen to us live. You can listen to the podcast, text in, watch videos, all that good stuff. So check out the 710 Sports app if you don't already have that. All right, Dave, let's talk about – oh, and by the way, in less than 15 minutes, we'll get into what's becoming a fan favorite. We'll hear the losers side of the broadcast coming up. So a little Philly – what Philly fans are saying about the loss. And, they're never at a loss for hate or anger or bitterness. So that should be a good one. The thing we have to remember about this segment, Dave, is that if the Seahawks lose a game, we're going to have to play calls from, your broadcast, perhaps. Maybe we're going to hear Dave in the background on some bad plays or something.
Oh, God.
so just keep that in mind as you're calling the game up there. But as far as this, the O-line goes, we talked about it earlier in the show, and I've been leading the bandwagon for this O-line. It's the best we've had in years. They've been fantastic, even when Yapati's been in and out pretty frequently. People have been jumping in, filling that spot. Ethan Posick is out. You get replacement. It just feels like they haven't really missed a beat, regardless of who's been in or out. It feels like it's changed a little bit in the past couple of games, and obviously a lot of that could be attributed to who they're facing. Excuse me. But I really focused in on how they were blocking for the running backs, because Chris Carson was back, and he was just a beast last night. But to me, he was a beast on his own. He wasn't a guy who was, massive holes being opened up and he's just all this green grass and daylight in front of him. He was just dragging guys with him, including on his TD run.
The handoff inside to Carson. He finds a hole across the 10, down to the 5. He's driving. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Chris Carson. Holy smoke, carried half of the Eagles' defense on his back and scores. The Seahawks go up 13-0. Beautiful hole for Carson up the middle, and he was off to the races And then it was all Chris Carson's second, third, and fourth effort.
Drags half the Eagles roster with him into the end zone.
Technically, it was one-fifth of their defense, Rabel. Okay, maybe a little bit less than that. No.
But, I mean, he had a little hole at the beginning of that one, but it just felt like how many, you know, we saw the handoff. We saw them try to run the little reverse, whereas people were in the backfield immediately. I just didn't feel like they had as good of a night. And again, all due respect to Philly, they are a good front seven. But do you feel like the line's maybe taking a bit of a step back? Maybe it's just attrition, guys being in and out?
Yeah, they just teed off. I don't know. I think that there's something about playing a defense that, because remember, Jake asked me that question on the fourth down play, if you can imagine that play, where Barnett and Hargrave just, I mean, Ethan Posick made the tackle.
Yeah.
he got
trucked.
Just killed and right into David Moore. And then, like Jake was saying, that, you know, typically when you see a lineman over you pull a tackle, pull to the outside, you're all of a sudden, oh, what's up? I am going to have to get outside of him, and there's probably going to be a crack block. You know, and all this happens in like point, you know, 1 second. But you could see that he just had his ears pinned back and he was just going to get upfield. So I guess you could say, well, maybe they didn't take advantage of that enough. You know, maybe run some. And they did. They ran a trap play that Carlos Hyde had, and that was the holding penalty. Where I think Carson's run was the trap play where, you know, you just let the guy go upfield and the guard comes across and gets him, and now you got an extra blocker. It was the same play that they ran last year, pretty similar. Remember the Rashad Penny touchdown for about 57 yards?
Right.
It was a little trap play, a little inside trap play. Those plays go for maybe 4 or 5, but if you hit it quickly, and that's kind of they figured that out in the end because these guys were just pinning their ears back and going upfield. So that could make you look really bad as an offense.
Right.
Until you fix it, until you, you know, hit them with a screen or hit them with a trap play like that, a quick hitting play. So, yeah, we got to be real. You look at the rest of the league. I mean, I think that Russ, to me, the thing is he's had time to throw deep because at one point he had one of the highest averages in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Right now he's 8.2, so he's down the list pretty far because, like, Deshaun Watson's 8.8. But that just indicates that you're getting time.
Right.
You're getting time to throw. So he's not that far down the list. He's fifth now as far as average. So you're getting time, but you do have to look at the fact that he's getting sacked a lot. I mean, Carson Wentz is 46 now, but Russ is second with 35.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at some of these other offensive lines and what they're doing for their, you know, for their quarterback. I mean, you know, Patrick Holmes has been sacked 14 times. And, you look at some of these other guys. Phillip Rivers, only 10.
So, that's amazing because he's not a mobile guy.
No, and Breeze is 10. So, I mean, look, I don't think Russ is running into all of those. So, yeah, they've had a little bit of difficulty, and especially lately. But still, I think, you know, it's a lot to ask of when you have, you know, you do have one piece that's kind of, you know, missing with your right tackle with Brandon Schell. And, you know, Philadelphia, people in Philly, they don't want to hear that. Because they had, like, everybody was at a different spot.
They were going to see if one of their coaches could play O-line. Quickly, want to get a couple thoughts on the return of Chris Carson. Here's what Pete had to say.
His style of play is just, you know, just we love it so much. It seemed like a lot more yards than that. You know, he didn't carry the ball that many times either, you know, but he was really a factor. He looked great. And because of the catches he had as well, you know, and started right off the game getting the ball, and he just looked terrific. And so I'm hoping that he comes out of the game feeling all right, didn't get banged up much, and can you know keep doing it next week. Carlos played good too, but it was really Chris had the bigger plays on this night, and the touchdown run was just a fantastic play. That was so cool, the way the cuts that he made, and then the finish, and the explosion at the goal line. You know, it was a beautiful play.
And then one more from DK Metcalf talking about, you know, the toughness being brought back by Carson.
He brought toughness back to the offense. You know, Carlos ran hard last week, but just to see 32 back down the backfield running over people and carrying people for 2 to 3 yards after these hit is amazing.
Yeah, that run caught everybody's eye because if you look at it, Dave, 8 carries, 41 yards, a touchdown. You're like, all right. I mean, 5.1 per carry, that's good. But 41 yards, he had 2 catches on the night for 18 yards. One of them went for 12 yards. So statistically, you look at it and go, I don't see a ton. But with the momentum created or just the sort of motivation created by that touchdown run where he is dragging guys in there, that's got to get everybody fired up to watch that.
Yeah. Well, and the way he finishes it and runs over, you know, not only the receivers, but, you know, also some of his, it was like Freddie Swain and Hollister, and he just ran through him. So well executed with Yapati and Damian Lewis, this trap play. It's all about timing, and Carson runs just a perfect path and finds his blockers. But that's what kind of slowed him down, you know, that pass rush, because when you have guys that are just firing up field, you run a little trap play, you catch them, you're holing those tackles as they go. You know, the guard kind of stands up like he's going to block the guy, and then he goes upfield and gets the linebacker. And when you're the lineman who doesn't get blocked, all of a sudden you turn to look, and boom, there's a guard right in your face. So that's that just really well-timed play, and I thought it was a good call by Schottenheimer against a D-line that was just, like I said, pinning their ears back. But, yeah, Carson, he gets the defense fired up too, not just the offense. I mean, the offensive linemen love him, but the defense like him too.
All right, coming up, time to check in with the losers. We're going to hear what Philly fans are saying about the loss. That's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This is becoming very popular with our listeners, as each week after the Seahawks win, much more often than they've lost, 8-3, we take a listen to the reaction of the opposing team's fan base. See how they're responding. Different cities, you get a little different attitude. I look forward to these ones. I look forward to Philadelphia and New York, where it's almost as if the fan base is eager to be upset, more eager, more excited to be mad than they are to celebrate a win. And I would imagine that's the case in Philly. What'd you get there, Moore?
Yeah, I would say that I think we started this during the Philly matchup last year. I think there was a little more anger last year. This year, they're just a little more disheartened. There's a lot of DK Metcalf envy.
Yeah.
The fact that they did not take him.
Because they went with Arcega Whiteside instead.
So most of these cuts center around DK Metcalf. They're even mad at Jim Schwartz for saying anything to him.
Why did you egg him on? Why'd you anger him? Yeah. Let's hear it.
All right. We'll start out with Larry. He thought that Doug Peterson would be fired today.
Get Larry in Ridley Park. Larry, you're on the Eagles postgame show.
Fellas, you might think I'm a little bit crazy, but I got a two-part question, okay?
Yes.
I got this gut feeling that the coach is going to get fired tomorrow.
Tell me what specifically makes you
think? Well, as you guys were talking about, there seems to be no plan, no improvement, no nothing.
It seems that when we talk about, and they did a great job talking about it last night on the broadcast, everybody that's been hurt, everybody that's missing, how many different people have played on that O-line and what they don't have at receiver, how much can you put on the coach? How can you say, well, why aren't you better? Everybody's hurt. You've got no weapons and your quarterback is getting killed. He's leading the league in sacks. But he's also making poor decisions. I mean, how much of that is on Doug Peterson? Now, the Jalen Hurts thing was weird. When they brought him out for a play, I would question him on that, but I wouldn't fire him because of that. Then Elombre seemed to think he was just trying to make a point. It seems as good an excuse as any, because having him throw one ball and then pulling him from the game just made no sense. But how much could you put on the coach there?
Yeah, to me, it's Howie Roseman. I mean, look... You know how supposedly upset Aaron Rodgers was when they, you know, drafted his supposed backup. But knowing that, you know, the stat that we had earlier that, you know, 54 or 59 million against the cap next year and then 24 the year after that, you are pot committed to Carson Wentz. Why are you not out there drafting and, and getting him weapons. Carson Wentz, that's your guy. You've gone with him. You paid him that way. How about some support? And, you know, and I guess that's the same complaint that we've had here with Russell, but, you know, Lockett and Metcalf, and then they tried, you know, went and got, you know, Greg Olsen. They went and tried to get, you know, I can never remember his name because he's on IR, the receiver from New England.
Oh, Dorsett.
Philip Dorsett. Yeah, so, I mean, at least you're trying to do that. And maybe that's what he's done there. But, I mean, this is 2 years now where you've got Greg Ward, who is one of your top receivers, and he was a quarterback, you know, at Houston. You've got Boston Scott, who's a little running back, who's a good little player. But, I mean, that guy was, like, on the scrap heap. He was on the New Orleans practice squad last year. And, you know, they went and got Miles Sanders. But, I mean, where are the great weapons, I guess, to me? That's what looks from afar anyway. That was what I would be complaining is about Roseman and why he's not getting a guy that – and, you know, Alambre said you're not stuck with him. But, yeah, you are. You're stuck with him. And I think his point is that, well, it's not like we're stuck with this horrible quarterback. He's a good quarterback. And I agree with that. But you're stuck with him. I mean, you can't – you've got to make this work. So why aren't you out there making it work? Why aren't you being the John Schneider of Philadelphia?
Fair question. What else did we get from them, Moore?
Okay, this caller, Corey, is mad that Jim Schwartz upset DK pregame.
And I got something with DK Metcalf, man. It's like, Schwartz, why would you do that? That's like slapping a bull upside the head before you try to open the gate and let him go. Like,
yeah.
You don't do that. You know, I feel like, you know, Slay did all he could, you know. DK, you say he's the most dominant. I think he's up there top two with Derrick Henry as the most dominant offensive player in the league right now because you can't stop him. Only guy to really shut him down was Ramsey. But go look at when they played the Patriots. He was dominating Stephon Gilmore, yeah. You know.
So it's sort of like he believes had he not said that, the DK would have had maybe five catches for 53 yards and, you know, been not much of a factor. But if Schwartz, you know, went over there and poked him, then now he's going
to
try.
Well,
now
and then the host of the show went on to say that Jim Schwartz should be called into the owner's office and punished.
Why? And Dan, I'll ask you this. As a guy who competed at the highest level, you were an NFL player. Why in God's name would Jim Schwartz, before the game starts, poke that tiger of anybody you're going to do that to?
Literally the only guy on the field that can just destroy the night. Why would you piss him off?
How does that benefit your team? Like, how are you? What are you trying to prove? Even if you feel that way, keep your mouth shut.
I don't know. I have
no
idea what Jim Schwartz is thinking there. If I'm Doug Peterson, I'd fine him.
I'm telling you right now, if I'm Jeffrey Lurie tomorrow morning, I need to see you in my office.
That is so dumb. Come on.
The whole thing was him just trying to be nice to DK.
Yeah, you see, and he clarified it even again after the game. He was trying to give him a compliment. Now DK turned it into a slight that he used as motivation. But, I mean, do we really believe that's why he's played well there before? So are we to believe that otherwise he would have had a mediocre game and now that prompted him to really, what, run faster, run better routes, catch a ball he wouldn't normally catch? I mean, I'm not sure what they think was happening there.
Well, yeah, I think DK kind of made it into something a little bit because, I don't know, anybody, I'm sure that Schwartz just thought he was really encouraging him. I bet you he thought if anything, he was kind of softening him up, like saying, hey, man, you are really something else. You could be on a track of being as good as Megatron. I mean, maybe he thought it went that way, but it seems like the callers in Philadelphia have made up their minds on how that went down.
Well, I think when DK tweeted out that meme of Jordan from The Last Dance saying, and I took that personally, he's saying that he realizes that's not how Schwartz meant it, but he wanted to use that.
Yeah, the idea that was a difference in his performance, I mean, the idea, you call him into the office. Don't you ever compliment another player. Don't you ever speak to another player. It's like, come on, man. Come
I on. Saw somebody on Twitter put they photoshopped DK's head on Michael Jordan's body where he's saying that. And he's like holding a cigar and a glass of whiskey or something.
Did we get anything else from them out there?
Yes, they pointed out the very sad stat that the Broncos had more yards with a practice squad quarterback on 24 hours notice in the first quarter than the Eagles did.
Right. I saw you had the, I think, the tweet of the night, and you said the Broncos yesterday playing with a practice squad quarterback had 50 yards in the first quarter. Mm. The Eagles had 27. Like, if that doesn't sum up what they are, and like you said, this is a historically bad defense. Like, it's on the precipice of being the worst secondary in the history of the NFL. And you're averaging 1.8 yards a pass? Like, this is just... This is lost.
Elliot,
right? This season's lost.
Like you said, I don't think it can get worse, and then it gets worse every single week.
I should mention these are all from WIP Radio in Philadelphia.
And I'll say this, that they're surprisingly composed. I mean, the last one about Schwartz, and he was the problem, he should be called into the office, blah. I mean, that's just dumb. But
I expected more yelling.
Yeah, I wanted more outrage.
Yeah.
But I think they've been, you're right, they're beaten down. I mean, they're 3-8 now? 3-8-1 or whatever.
So.
Is that what it is? But yeah, I mean,
7-1, I think.
Yeah, so this isn't new. It's not like, man, I can't believe we lost. I mean, you've been losing. You got 3 wins. So I think maybe they've been beaten into submission a bit.
Yeah. Well, and it's a tough fan base there, man. I just, it would have been interesting to see if they're lucky. They're kind of like the Astros, right? I mean, if they had all the fans
man.
It would be ugly.
That would be, especially that pass to Diggs. Wentz might have had to run into the locker room after that. They would have been showering the field with obstacles. I'm certain of it. All right, coming up, we'll talk some more football. The professor, John Clayton, will join us next here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.